Today is Thursday, August 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Welcome to the program. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, an attack on American University in Kabul, Afghanistan. More aftershocks and a rising death toll following an earthquake in Italy. After months of being called a racist, Donald Trump reaches out to African-American voters.
What do you have to lose? I will fix the problem.
Also ahead, an Earth-like planet discovered 4.2 light years away. It's all on today's International Edition. With 75 days to go until Americans vote for a new president, Donald Trump is again urging African Americans and Hispanics to give him a chance.
I want every African American parent in this country and all parents in this country to be able to raise their children in safety with rates of crime, with rates of poverty like you've just heard. What do you have to lose? I will fix the problem. We will fix it.
Well, speaking in Tampa, Florida, Trump said that Democratic policies have only led to more poverty, crime, and joblessness in cities like Chicago and Baltimore. It comes following months of accusations that Trump is a racist. We're now joined by Michael Ezra, professor of American Multicultural Studies at Sonoma State University in California, for more on Trump's new strategy. Michael, will it work?
I don't think the tactic will work. I'm not even sure if it's a serious attempt to reach out to African-American and Latino voters. It may be an attempt to encourage moderate white voters to convince them that Donald Trump is not synonymous with racist. I think that Donald Trump and any Republican really in a presidential election has a hard time getting non-white voters. The Republican Party has gotten about 89% or more of its votes from white voters since 1968. African Americans are even harder on the Republican Party in presidential elections. Something like 93% of African Americans vote Democrat in presidential elections. So I think it's more an attempt to consolidate his white vote than really a serious pitch to African American voters and certainly Latino voters who lost a long time ago.
But he's also talking about softening his stance now on immigration. He's not going to deport all the people that are here in this country illegally and pretty much doing a 180 on that. Will he be able to garner some votes because of that? And will they be, like you said, just from more moderate white voters? Or will any of these minorities actually, I guess you could say, buy what he's selling?
I think it's a little hard for him to pivot because he puts so much into the immigration issue when he started his campaign. It really became his signature. And it just rings so false for him to be reading these new messages off a teleprompter. Had people not been paying attention to the Republican primary and Donald Trump kind of came out of nowhere, then he could refurnish his policy a little bit. But everyone knows what he's all about. So it's almost, I think, impossible for him to change.
He's also been criticized for making these statements in front of all white audiences. But we are hearing that he will be actually reaching out to African-American groups, Hispanic groups, actually meeting with them in person.
It will be different for him to meet in front of an African-American group. That would be something interesting because he would not be able to control the crowd reaction the way he is at his rallies. And he's been offered a chance to speak in front of the NAACP. He's been offered a chance to speak in front of the National Association of Black Journalists. And he's been offered a chance to speak in front of the Urban League. So you really have a pretty wide spectrum of African-American groups, conservative, moderate, and liberal. And he's rejected all their offers. Donald Trump says things that don't always come true. And I think this is probably the case here. I think he would be probably booed out of the arena if he met with those groups.
What do you make of how he's going about making the case, saying you're living in poverty, you go walk down the street and you're going to get shot? What the hell do you have to lose?
Right, that's not a very specific pitch. He's painting it with very broad strokes. Only 25% of the African American population is below the poverty line, so he's already misrepresenting African Americans. And the idea that the Democratic Party certainly hasn't solved all of Black America's problems or anything like that, but the Democratic Party historically is more representative than the Republican Party. There's a reason why African Americans vote about 9-1 for Democrats over Republicans in presidential elections. Black voters must feel that a Democratic Party does a better job than the Republican Party.
That's Sonoma State University Professor Michael Ezra. Thanks so much. Well, Trump is expected to unveil his new immigration policy sometime next week. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton is talking about Zika and proposing a new fund to improve the federal government's response to major public health crises. But she does continue to be dogged by her emails and ethics questions surrounding her family's charitable foundation. Her top campaign officials argue the foundation has helped millions of people around the globe. University of Virginia political analyst Jeffrey Skelly talks about this latest Clinton controversy.
I think you're going to need some really smoking gun kind of revelations here, because at the end of the day, I mean, your average politician or political figure, I mean, they meet with people who donate money to their campaigns. And the difference here, of course, I guess, is that the Clinton Foundation is not a political entity, but it's still an entity involving money. So it's something that I don't think surprises anyone necessarily. It's one of those things where the AP report really spoke to sort of a fundamental problem for Hillary Clinton and the Clintons in general. It said that it appeared that they hadn't broken the rules of the legal agreement that they signed when she took over as Secretary of State in terms of how they would handle this relationship, the fact that there was a Clinton Foundation, but you also had Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. But, of course, it looks like these circumstances could create potential conflicts of interest, that there was influence peddling. I mean, all of this looks bad and really does go along with very much a narrative about the Clintons that we've seen, you know, just kind of confirmed over and over again.
Well, let's turn now to what's trending on social media with our social media guru, G. Abby Lee. Hi, G. What are people talking about today?
Hi, Lori. A comment David Axelrod made on CNN is trending on Facebook. He was a senior advisor to President Barack Obama from 2009 to 2011, and he's now a commentator for CNN. And he said Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton should not be joking about the email server. The Republican National Committee was one of the first to repost a comment, and as you can imagine, the popular comments all slammed Clinton. But major media outlets have yet to highlight the comment.
I see. Well, the Clinton campaign certainly enjoyed some support last night on the West Coast.
Definitely. Celebrity couple Jessica Biel and Justin Timberlake hosted a fundraiser for Clinton at their L.A. home. Photos taken at a photo booth are shared on various entertainment magazines' accounts, but it seems like a lot of those who left comments were disappointed with the fact that she was there and not in Louisiana. One person wrote, "Louisiana is drowning, but she gets a phone call from Justin Timberlake and they get a photo booth. That's a leader we need, right?" Others still pointed out that it's nice to see a presidential candidate having fun.
All right, well, let's check on international news. What are people saying about the terrible quake in Italy?
Well, on Twitter, it's more about what people are showing as opposed to saying. Twitter users are sharing before and after photos of the earthquake, and many of these photos are from Google Maps Street View, and it's quite devastating to see all this damage. The overwhelming response is that of asking prayers for the victims and their families, and some commenters also pointed out prayers will be flooding in because it happened in Europe and not in a developing country. Hashtag prayer for Italy has been trending on Wednesday.
What else is trending, G?
Last but certainly not least, Thor the Bengal cat is also trending. The cat living in Belgium has striped fur that makes it look like a Bengal tiger. Have you seen that photo?
I saw it. It's beautiful.
It is, isn't it?
I just want to take him home.
Oh, my gosh. And that's exactly what the media post about Thor is raising awareness, because it is raising awareness about adopting street cats on social media. That's all for me today. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. A U.S. man sentenced to 8 years for trying to join Islamic State. Asian culture spices up America's melting pot. Job prospects look good for recent college grads. And a young entrepreneur leads unusual tours in South Africa. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. An attack on the American University in Afghanistan has ended after at least 7 people were killed and more than 30 were wounded on Wednesday. State Department Press Secretary Elizabeth Trudeau.
We condemn this attack in the strongest possible terms. An attack on a university is an attack on the future of Afghanistan.
About 700 students were rescued. Reporter Sune Rasmussen was at the scene.
I think first they blew up the sort of thin wall surrounding the campus, and then they stormed inside. And there would have been, there's a lot of people who managed to escape also just when the attack happened. So probably as the security forces make their way through the campus, they clear areas and they're able to take people out or people, able to tell people to evacuate.
Though there have been no immediate claims of responsibility for the attack on the university, which is on the edge of Kabul. It was established in 2006 to offer liberal arts courses modeled on the U.S. system and has more than 1,000 students currently enrolled. Italian authorities say that the death toll from Tuesday's earthquake has risen to 159. Among the victims was an 18-month-old girl whose mother survived the deadly earthquake of 2009 in a nearby town and moved away from there after that terrible experience. The U.S. Geological Survey put the magnitude at 6.2 with an epicenter about 10 kilometers southwest of the town of Norcia. International Edition's Sarah Williams spoke with VOA's Jamie Detmer, who's in Montefiore del Aso.
So far, we know that 3 villages, at least, all 3 were to the southeast of Norcia, which had the, which was at the epicenter, had been severely damaged. One or two, people are talking about having been leveled. None of the big cities so far have suffered any extensive damage, but this tremor at 3:36, which was, you know, variously reported between 6.2 and 6.4. On the Richter scale, was felt as far north as Bologna, even further, actually, down in Rome and south of Rome as well. We're getting considerable number of aftershocks, so about 80 have been reported across the country. Where I am in Montefiore at del Aso, which is a village just off the Adriatic coast, about 115 kilometers from the epicenter, as well as the big jolt at 3:36, which lasted for nearly 30 seconds, we felt 3 or 4 other jolts as well. Couple lasting about 20 seconds.
Well, since this area is near the Adriatic coast, are there a lot of tourists there at this time?
There are quite a few Italian tourists. It's running towards the end of the season. I'm staying at a hotel I've been at before, Hotel Magnolia, a beautiful hotel above a picturesque valley which runs into the Adriatic. Most of the guests here, most of the guests we've seen in the villages around are Italians. It's towards the end of the summer. So most of the North European families have disappeared. Obviously, they've got kids going back to school. So it's towards the end of the season. There's many Italian holidaymakers here to this.
Is this area, I believe this area is on a fault?
Yes, of course it is. And, of course, there's a lot of concern about 6-7 years ago, 2009, at L'Aquila, which a big city in central Italy as well, that got tremendously hammered by an earthquake. We seem to be getting in central Italy, in the provinces of Umbria, Marche, Lazio, an earthquake about every 3 or 4 years. There was another big one about 3 years ago in the Abruzzi, another central province of Italy.
That's VOA's Jamie Detmer. Well, now let's turn to economic issues. Volume and action on Wall Street should be relatively quiet through the Labor Day holiday on September 5th, which is one of the most popular U.S. vacation periods on the annual trading calendar now upon us. Now, investors will be looking for clues, though, this week from Fed Chair Janet Yellen. International Edition's Jim Stevenson talks more about that from market analyst Jill Malandrino.
What we're focusing on in the U.S. this week, and which will also impact global markets, the Kansas City Federal Reserve Bank hosts an annual monetary policy symposium discussing different areas of the market and how they think they may frame monetary policy going forward. It occurs in Jackson Hole, Wyoming each year. And the big thing that we are waiting for is Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen's speech on Friday at 11 o'clock Eastern. Now, this is why Jackson Hole is really important. These speeches are analyzed in depth, and headlines can move the markets, particularly the financial sector and commodities, because they are the most price sensitive to swings in the U.S. dollar. Investors will examine Yellen's remarks to gauge the likelihood of a rate hike in September, or if she's going to wait until December after the election or until 2017 altogether. Now, it's not just the U.S. equity markets that are impacted. For example, I cover African markets for other products at VOA, and fluctuations in the dollar impacts their economies drastically, since African economies are largely importers of basic goods and services. So, for example, Nigeria's local currency, the Naira, is at historically low levels against the dollar, which makes imports more expensive. Now, should Janet Yellen and the Fed decide to raise interest rates, the dollar will trade higher relative to other currencies, and that will, in the short term, hurt prices in economies dependent on imports because the cost will get passed down to the consumer. So the media, we tend to focus on the movement of global equities, but the story is really derived from currency fluctuations and how it impacts economies, trade balance, and consumer spending.
And beyond what Janet Yellen might have to say, we've been watching oil for so much of this year because the market has been closely linked to it. We saw a little bit of slippage in it this past week.
Yeah, we did, because you're starting to see oil supply glut concerns emerge again. We had a little bit of a run-up into the back half of last week, as there was some talk that the Saudis may start to alleviate some of their production, but we're actually seeing them produce record levels. You also might see Nigeria start to come back online. That's another concern. So what's happening is, it seems if crude oil, the appropriate level it should be trading is between $40 and $50 based on supply and demand today, which is how the market should function. Anytime you get into the higher 40s, lower 50s, the producers turn the spigots back on again because they want to try to build up their revenue streams. There you add to the supply glut. So it's kind of like you're running in a hamster wheel if you're a producer, because as those prices get higher, there's not enough demand, too much supply, and they come back down. So it's kind of the cycle that we're stuck in right now.
That's markets reporter Jill Malandrino. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA. A leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, a couple of exciting new movies to tell you about. But first, scientists have announced the discovery of a potentially habitable planet just outside of our solar system. Joining me to talk more about this Earth-like planet, NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador Greg Redfern. Greg, this is pretty exciting. Tell us more about it.
What they found, Lori, was an exoplanet. And an exoplanet is a planet that exists beyond our solar system that has Earth-like qualities. That's not to say it's another Earth, but it has Earth-like qualities in terms of it is a rocky planet. It is at least 1.3 times more massive than the Earth, and it is in orbit around a red dwarf star and only about 4.5 million miles. But here's the neatest news. The temperature on the planet would allow liquid water, if water exists on the planet. So we have a rocky planet. We have it able to have liquid water. And this is the most stunning news to me, is this is rotating or orbiting around a star that is the closest star to us next to our sun in the entire universe. It's only 4.2 light years away. That's stunning.
Wow. Is this something we could actually reach?
Theoretically, there is a $100 million mission that's got the backing of Stephen Hawking and some of the internet billionaires. It's called Starshot, that could send a very, very minuscule spacecraft powered by lasers hitting it out there to Proxima Centauri. And with the discovery of this exoplanet, I am sure there's going to be a lot of thought about how could we get there. And what our listeners may not know is that a red dwarf star, like Proxima, which is the name of the parent star, that star is going to live a trillion. That's with a T, a trillion years, because it's so small. It's only a tenth as massive as our sun. Our sun dies out in 5 more billion years. This star is going to be going and going and going like the proverbial Energizer bunny. So life on that planet is assured a long, long existence, if there is life.
And is there a possibility that there is life?
Absolutely. For life as we know it, if there is the presence of water. And the other thing we're going to have to find out, does this planet have an atmosphere? This would not be a Garden of Eden because it's only 4.5 million miles from its parent star. It would still be subjected to high energy radiation coming in off of the star. It would require an atmosphere and a magnetic field to help protect anything on the surface. But it's possible that you could have zones along the night and dark side. It's not going to have any seasons because, like our moon, Lori, this is gravitationally locked to have the same face always towards its parent star. So you're not going to get seasons or anything like we do here on Earth.
So what would it be?
But you would have one side perpetually facing the night, one side perpetually facing the sun, but you could have habitable zones in along the area near the terminator, we call it, the space between night and day. You could have some habitable spots up maybe by the poles, stuff like that. And I'm convinced that life always finds a way. So if there is an atmosphere that helps protect, if there is liquid water, there's definitely possibilities.
All right. Well, that sounds very exciting. Thanks so much, NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador Greg Redfern. Well, there are a couple new movies hitting U.S. theaters this weekend. Here to talk more about that, Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Hi, Jeff. What's the first one?
It's called Hell or High Water, and it's about two Texas brothers, Chris Pine and Ben Foster, who they come together after years of being estranged, and they start robbing banks because the bank has foreclosed on their family land, and they were cheated out of it. They're trying to find something for their namesakes, for their kids. And so the holdups are part of this scheme that just seems ridiculous, you know, because these guys don't know what they're doing. You know, they're pushed up against the wall. They're trying to figure out how to provide for their families in future. But they were trying to play by the rules, and look what it got them. So now they're robbing banks. I know. This is a Western. It's a modern Western. I'm a big Western fanatic. And the Texas Ranger who's on their trail is none other than the great Jeff Bridges. And he just talks like this the whole movie, you know. And he's fantastic. So the movie, It has such excitement to it. It's got deep characters. And it's from the guy who wrote, Taylor Sheridan, who wrote Sicario. I don't know if you saw that movie last year. About with Benicio del Toro, about the drug trade going on between the border wars. It was really popular last year. Really well done. So we've got Jeff Bridges, Chris Pine, and Ben Foster. We've got outstanding performances. And this is going to be one of the most talked about movies of the year. And even though it came out this summer, you're going to remember this movie come awards time. It's going to be a critical favorite, and it's going to be hopefully an Academy favorite.
Wow, that's quite an endorsement. I know we have a horror, a scary movie.
We do. We have a horror film to end the summer. You know, all the kids are going back to school in the next few weeks, so we have another one of these studio mill horror films called Don't Breathe. And it's about three teenagers who break into the house of a wealthy blind man, think they're going to get away with the perfect heist. well, they're wrong. And you think to yourself, okay, there's no demons, there's no ghosts, you know, there's no supernatural element. It's just a Gulf War veteran who lost his sight in the war, who got a large settlement, who lives in a dilapidated neighborhood in somewhere in Detroit, Michigan. And these guys go in there, and of course, you're thinking, well, how can a blind man be such a challenge? Well, when he locks them in their house, they're in his territory. And the movie, I mean, you think to yourself, wait a minute, how can that be exciting? How can that build suspense? But it does, Lori. I'm telling you, this is one of the funnest movies I've had all summer. I was out of my seat. People were going crazy.
Really?
And you have to experience it.
You
really
do. Going crazy, like as in it's really scary or funny?
Yes. No, scary. It's actually thrilling. I mean, there are times it's called Don't Breathe because the blind man listens. So sometimes during the movie, when he's sitting there with his gun, when he's sitting there with his crowbar, and, you know, it's really outrageous behavior, the audience is dead silent. I mean, nobody is even breathing because you see the characters holding their hands over their mouth, and he's got this Rottweiler that chases him through the house. I mean, it's crazy. It really is. It's an hour and a half of nonstop thrills, excitement, and suspense. And it's one of the best times I've had this year. It's really fun, I'm telling you. And the audience was going crazy for it. I know it sounds crazy, but it's from Ghost House Pictures, who just do really good horror films, but this is a great thriller. There's no ghosts and monsters and blood and gore. It's just thrills. Very Hitchcock.
All right. Jeffrey K. Howard, thank you so much. We always appreciate it. You can see full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
You've been listening to International Edition. We are glad you could join us, and you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thanks so much to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubair El Tayeb. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Senior officials from the U.S. Embassy in Vientiane and U.S. Pacific Command, or USPACOM, met in Honolulu with senior officials from the Lao Ministry of National Defense for the 11th Lao-United States Bilateral Defense Dialogue. Brigadier General Khin Chan Nantalasi, Director of Foreign Relations Department, Ministry of National Defense, and Brigadier General Mark Gillette, Deputy Director of USPACOM Directorate for Strategic Plans and Policy, led the meeting. Over 30 Lao and U.S. delegates participated in the event, including representatives from the Lao Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Defense Security Cooperation Agency in Washington, D.C. Ambassador Daniel Clune noted in his opening remarks the significant expansion of bilateral military cooperation in recent years and the positive impact it is having on the overall U.S.-Lao relationship. The Bilateral Defense Dialogue is a forum for bilateral consultations between the Lao Ministry of National Defense and U.S. Pacific Command to strengthen bilateral and multilateral cooperation, as well as develop defense cooperation programs that enhance relations between our security forces, encourage greater regional military cooperation, and promote the common interests of both countries. Primary topics of the dialogue included military-medical cooperation, civil-military operations to include cooperation on humanitarian unexploded ordnance removal and disaster relief, training and education opportunities to include English language training and professional military education, and Lao People's Army participation in regional conferences, workshops, and senior-level meetings. The United States is proud to work with its partner Laos for the benefit of both nations and the Asia-Pacific region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.